I didn't expect today's podcast to be about one of my problems, and that's what happened. What's up, Active Lifers? Welcome back to the Active Life Podcast. I'm Dr. Sean Pastuch. I'm your host. Today's podcast, I'm joined by Kaylin Ashby, who is our lead educator on the curriculum side for ALP. And today we're talking about the pelvic health course that we just got finished building. I have a pelvic health problem. I've never talked about it publicly. It's never been on Instagram. It's never been on the podcast. There's never been anything I've ever said that would allow anybody to know that I have this issue. And I don't know why. I'm not ashamed of it. But there is a level of feeling like less of a man because this is my problem. And we talked through it on the podcast today. This was supposed to be a podcast all about the inner workings of a course that we developed. And we do discuss that. So if you're interested in learning about courses that we put out, stick around, pay attention. If you're interested in learning about how a guy can struggle with pelvic floor health and what there is to do about it, buckle up, baby. I got something for you today. I would love it if you would share this podcast with a friend. You never know. I didn't realize it until Kaylin brought it up on the show. You never know who is dealing with stuff that they are just dealing with because they're afraid to say it out loud. I've told one of our team members once before about this problem, and he suggested I get some work done for it. And I never did because it comes and it goes, as you'll hear on the show. But I've never talked to a guy who described having this problem. And what that tells me is not that I'm unique and I'm the only guy who has it. It's that guys don't want to talk about this problem. And so you sharing this podcast with a friend, especially a male friend, could give somebody permission to talk about a problem that they feel a lot of shame around that they otherwise don't have. And you won't know unless you share it with them. And you still might not know as a result of sharing it with them. But if you hold this podcast and you don't share it with a male friend, you run the risk of not helping somebody who really needs it. And so my ask of you is share this episode with a male friend. That's it. You can rate it if you want. You can write us a review if you want. The cost of admission on this one is sharing it with a male friend. Let's get to the show. Kaylin, welcome back, man.
Good to be back, Sean.
Yeah. I want to talk to you today about the women's health course that we built at Active Life. And before,
it's not women's health. It's not women's health.
What is it?
Pelvic health. It's pelvic health.
For men too.
There's a men's section, right? Men have pelvises, men have pelvic floors, men have pelvic problems. So yes, we initially thought about making it like a women's health, but we didn't want to exclude that men have problems too. So we included a section in there as well.
Fantastic. I want people who are listening to learn a few things from that right there. Number one, if you're leading a team, let people correct you when you're wrong. Number two, if you're leading a team, you don't necessarily have to know everything that's going on within the team. Because they're doing their job well and you don't need to intervene and micromanage it. Number three, men have pelvises too.
Yes, men also have a pelvis.
So it's pelvic health. Now, before we go any further, and by the way, that also indicates to all of you, I really have genuine questions today about our own course because I don't know what's in it and I'm curious. Who helped you on this? So that people understand this was not a one-man show. Like what goes into creating any course at Active Life?
It starts with the planning process, just like anything else. Like we sit down and we build out a skeleton of what we want to go into it. We set objectives for each section. We then set up a goal for each section. And then we set up objectives to achieve that goal. We have multiple planning meetings in which we set those out, make sure that those outline and make sense. And then we start to find all of the content and all of the resources that are going to go into there that need to fit to fill the problem that we've established as a thing.
How many people are involved in that process?
You want me to count them? Like you want a hard number?
No, give me a soft number. So 6.5. Yeah, what's the
Seven.
number?
It's always seven. Inside joke. So, I mean, you have one, five of us that were just initially involved in the planning. Sarah just did all of the back-end development work. We have a graphic designer to put everything together. I had multiple members on the coaching staff help me with finding resources for the content. So anywhere between 8 to 10 people,
And how
give or
long does it
take.
take to develop a course?
Months.
Would you walk me through what it, like, I'm genuinely interested. What's our process? The reason why, so for people who are listening, the reason I'm interviewing you today instead of any one of the other 10 people on the team is because you're effectively the curriculum lead.
Yes.
It's your job to make sure we have a product that we can stand behind and deliver. Yes?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So at the end of the day, the buck stops with Kalen, regardless of who is contributing to the buck. So what is our process for creating a course worth taking?
So first we meet, we establish that there's an area that we want to discuss, right? So whether that's from frequent feedback that we get inside of our community, frequent questions that we get asked, we establish that there is a need for content in that particular area. Once we've established that there is a need, we set a planning timeline. We sit down and we have a board on Monday that comes down and basically says, here's all the checkpoints of when these things need to be done. We have an initial planning meeting. We sit down, outline the sections. This is what I imagine this looks like. Again, we build out the skeleton. From the skeleton, each section then gets a goal. Each goal then gets objectives to basically build into that goal. Once that's done, then I go to work on finding all of the resources, doing all the research, building all that out. I write a rough draft that goes through. I have Laura really comb through it for a lot of the grammatical errors, as well as to ask questions of things that don't make sense. We refine that. I write it again. She goes back through it. We do it again. Then we send it over to a graphic designer to build out the workbook. We record all the videos, all of the exercise demos that need to go into that for new assessments. Once that's all done, then a reviewer course gets published. The team and I then can go through the reviewer course to flush it all out. The coaching staff also goes through the course, flush it all out on their end. And then as we're doing that, then we launch.
So, for people's edification, Monday is our CRM software. It's not the day of the week that we're talking about.
Yes, sorry.
And when you say it's okay, when you say a reviewer course, what you mean is it goes up on our effectively our internal portal, and we're able to go through the course without having a mentor assigned to us, without quizzes and tests and things of that nature, so that we can just as a team review it and make sure it makes sense and we understand it. In that part of the process, is there a question asking? Is there more editing that happens as a result of the reviewer course part?
Yeah. So we have like bi-weekly and weekly team meetings, right? And so we've scheduled out team meetings between the ALP side of the house and the RX side of the house. And we meet together and we discuss things that are going in the course, as well as questions that have come up, things in the content that maybe need more clarification. And then we make edits along the way, like as we need to. To your point of like the reviewer course, they still have access to all the assignments because I want them to see the assignments. I want to make sure that the assignments are filling the knowledge gap that the content can't give. Right. So like there's a certain level of in all of our courses where action and practice has to come into play. And so I wanted to make sure that those assignments still fill the gap. Again, same thing with the quizzes, that those are still available. They can still take them. They can go through them a little bit faster, but they still can take them to make sure all the questions flush out. Right.
Explain that to me more. What do you mean that there's a content gap that needs to be filled with assignments? I want people who are listening. The reason I'm asking you about the development of the course is because I know that what we do goes an extra mile as compared to the average course that somebody's going to find online that they can buy for $500 or $1,000. I know it does. But the truth is, I don't know in great detail how it does. And so, one of the reasons I wanted to interview you about this course in particular is because I wanted to be able to ask you questions about course development in general. So when you take your time with it, what happens in the assignment portion that doesn't happen in the education portion, the curriculum portion, I should say?
Practical application, right?
Like what? What's an example for this one?
So, for example, one of the assignments that I wrote for this course is to go out and interview, like, because there's a big section on pregnancy and like postpartum, right? Because that's a lot of where the pelvic health sphere is living. One of the assignments is for our ALPs to go out and to interview women who have had pregnancies, C-sections, like complications in delivery, and getting their experience. Hey, what was this like for you trying to navigate this sphere by yourself? So they can speak to those problems. They can speak to that audience. They can get more context that generically we could provide, but it's not as specific as it likely could be.
How do we make sure they did that assignment?
We have a grading team that goes through, and the assignment has the names and the dates in which they do the assignment, right? They submit what they learned from doing the thing.
Mm-hmm. What are other examples of assignment? I love that one. Because one of my concerns about this course, like I asked you before we started, because I had to figure out like how do I speak to that if we don't do this? And I'm glad that we do, would be that women have pelvises too. And theirs are more complicated because of what they need to do than ours. And if you built this course with a bunch of men, it would feel like we were guessing at best. And so I'm really happy to hear that we have not only women, but women who've bared multiple children who contributed to the course development. What are examples of other assignments that people are going to have when they go through this course in particular?
So in terms of like application, there's multiple case studies that are based on real world people, right? So like I basically took client avatars from individuals that I know and got their experience from, and they have to be able to effectively build a program based on that person's goals, write out progressions, regressions, what that looks like for somebody who's freshly postpartum or somebody who's been, you know, postpartum for 2 years that wants to get back to doing this thing, that if that makes sense. So we get to see, go ahead.
It makes sense. And if you have it available, and I probably should have asked you, I couldn't ask you. I didn't know that this would come up. Do you have a case study handy?
I can try to find one really quickly.
It would be amazing if you could read through the description of the avatar client and the assignment that they need to do. Because as people listen to this, there's a level of understanding that they're going to be able to get. Oh, cool. They have like assignments, interview this person. What'd you learn? Great. You learned some cool stuff. Check box. Mm-hmm. And then I think that when they hear the depth with which we require our graduates to be able to understand and perform, it'll be a light bulb that this ain't your average course.
Right. So yeah, so we're going to go, like, this is basically for a woman in her second trimester of pregnancy, right? So Shelby's a 32-year-old mother of three, ages 10, 7, and 4, who is currently pregnant with her fourth child. She's currently 19 weeks pregnant, and her baby belly is just starting to show. She had quite a bit of morning sickness during her first trimester, resulting in consistent symptoms throughout the day, but minimal vomiting. She was unable to work out most of her first trimester due to her symptoms. She wants to get back into the gym and into the gym now that she's feeling better, but does not know where she would start or what types of exercises she should be avoiding. She was doing CrossFit for 2 years after her last pregnancy to help her lose her baby weight and really loves the group fitness atmosphere. She wants to maintain a healthier weight this pregnancy due to her not exercising much during her first three pregnancies and doesn't want to gain too much weight. She's willing to work out 3 days per week in the gym and has a full gym at home consisting of barbells, dumbbells, bands, a concept 2 bike, and a cable machine. Based on the above avatar, create an assessment phase over 2 to 3 sessions for this client, including movement screen modifications, if necessary, force capacity testing, client education. Please provide the rationale for testing selection, movement assessment modification, and client education topics.
So that's one assignment.
That's one assignment.
How many assignments are, go ahead, how many are there?
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine assignments for
So
this
there's nine
course.
assignments like that. The course is what, 12 or 13 weeks long?
I think it's built to be 3 to 4 months is what we're
Okay.
looking at.
Yeah, so 12 to 13 weeks.
Yeah.
So what assignment number was the one you just gave us?
Three.
Okay, what's assignment one? Because the reason I want to hear assignment one, let me, while you're looking for it, I'll bring this up, is there is pre-registered context that needs to be had in order for someone to be able to answer those questions. And the only way to gain the knowledge to be able to answer those questions is to do it on purpose, right? Like, it's easy to say she's 19 weeks pregnant, her baby belly is starting to show. What are the movement modifications? Well, the person needs to understand what's going on at 19 weeks in order to be able to do that. They need to understand the reason why a baby belly is starting to show. They need to understand the difference in the expected flexibility of somebody who's 19 weeks pregnant as compared to someone who's 40, as compared to someone who's one, right? So if we're talking about pregnancy, there's a lot going on there. They need to be able to understand, why is it maybe a good idea to lay on your left side, but not on your right side? Like, these simple little things. And if we don't teach that earlier, then we just expect that they're, oh yeah, someone with a belly. What would I do for someone with a belly? But there's a lot more. So I want to hear assignment one, just so we can hear
So,
the context.
yeah. Well, the big thing that we went, because we went with pelvic health in general, right? Like, this is not just a pregnancy postpartum course.
Right.
So pregnancy or the pelvic health course for me started like early. Again, like, what does typical development look like? What does the anatomy of the pelvic floor look like? Like, what is typical hormone fluctuation across a cycle? What is like all of those things that go into it? So the first assignment is like, what considerations would you make when working with females in the following situations? A female who's just entered childbearing years, a female who's experiencing a heavy flow on her period, and a female who's trying to conceive going into pregnancy. So it's taking earlier things into consideration, and then we build into pregnancy, and we build into postpartum, and then we go through there. So I wanted to take a much broader scope on it than just like, cool, it starts at like pregnancy only. Does that
Yeah,
make sense?
and it's not a pregnancy course. Pregnancy is included. And I
Yeah.
imagine that if we wanted to build a pregnancy exclusive course, we could do that too. But the idea here is not to make somebody a pregnancy specialist. We're talking about pelvic health. I get that. I'm curious what the first assignment says.
So the first assignment is like taking somebody who's going through those developing years and what modifications would you make to their training if you would make any? Why would you make them and providing rationale for those?
So what, like, what? What I'm hearing is a woman is now 23 years old, 24 years old. What modifications would you make for her as she enters this phase of life from the phase prior? I could be way off. I could be the wrong years because I didn't take this course and I don't know. What are some of the answers to things in that area?
So one of the things that we take into consideration is going to be that pelvic floor dysfunction can happen even much earlier than 23, right? So like young adolescent athletes are running into pelvic health dysfunction way before they're even thinking about having children. So that's something that we lean into a little bit earlier.
So when you're thinking
So
childbearing, so I was way off on childbearing age. You're
yeah.
talking like 14, 15.
Yeah, I mean, it could be as young as like, yeah, 17, like really, like as soon as their body starts to mature enough. Yeah.
And enough, I imagine, in the case of a female, is they're having their period.
We start to go into like through puberty, right? We start to
Okay.
basically get into those periods.
Okay. Wow. And how, so is there a male assignment?
There's not a male assignment for early development. There's
Is there a
not.
male
There
assignment?
was.
Is there a male assignment period across the
Yeah,
nine?
at the tail end, so we put a male pelvic health section at the back of the assignment that has client avatars that would have struggled with something that a man would have run
Can you
into.
share that? Can you share that one with me? I'm especially
Yeah.
curious because I don't know if you know this, I have a pelvic floor issue.
Oh, really?
And yeah, I've talked to Lance about it in the past, and I'm the worst because it's so infrequent that I experience it that I'm not wanting to do the work necessary to avoid experiencing it. And when I experience it, it's terrible. I have to lay on the floor. That's how bad it
Interesting.
is. Yeah. And
Interesting.
it can come out of nowhere.
So, do we want to unpack that further of like going into your pelvic floor, or do we want to go to the ascent?
Let's do the assignment. Well, whichever one is more interesting to you first, and then we can do the other one. Which one's more
Okay.
interesting to you first? Which way do you want to go?
Like, I'm more interested in like what's going on and like what you experience.
Okay. So what's going on with me is it usually happens after some kind of an effort. It's very rare that it happens without an effort. And that can be either that can be an effort going to the bathroom, right? We all have the days where it's like it just doesn't come out the way it's supposed to
Yes,
come
yeah, not
out.
flowing.
So it can happen from that. It can happen from squatting. It can happen from pressing. Like any real like a Valsalva is brings it on more frequently. And it feels like my insides are falling out of my balls and my ass at the same time. And it starts off really gentle. And it almost gives me a warning, like, hey bro,
Pump the
stop.
brake. Pump the brake.
Right. And when I forget that that's what I'm feeling, because sometimes it's not so obvious that that's what I'm feeling. I just feel like an overall body, like I get like a little bit nauseous, and I start to feel like I need to like I'm short on wind. And sometimes I'm like, ah, you're being a bitch. Like, suck it up, man. And I do. And then it feels like my insides are gonna fall out of my body. It's extremely painful. I find that the thing that relieves it best, honestly, is laying in the fetal position and moaning when it comes on. I've never had menstrual cramps. I've never had a baby, but this is the closest thing that I can describe to an experience that I imagine is like that. It's horrid. And it's, I break into sweats. It lasts anywhere from 20 to 40 minutes. Last time it happened, I was actually at Active Life, the flagship, by myself at like 5:30 in the morning. And I watched the clock to see how long it would take before I felt like I could get up and walk out, and it was about 25 minutes. That's what I feel. It feels like I need to, move my bowels and take a piss at the same time, but there's nothing in either. If I looked down at my balls, they're inside of my body, like they're non-existent, and my penis is shrunk to like a half of an inch in size, which for those of you listening is a significant shrinking. It's not like that's just halving. That's what I experience, and it's brutal, and it happens probably 4 times a year. But so when it happens, I'm motivated to do something about it. Then it passes. I'm like, you're not going to do something about it. I should, because if God forbid this went from a quarterly thing to a weekly thing or a daily thing, I would be borderline debilitated.
Right, wouldn't be able to do anything, right? Like if it got
It's
severe enough, it would take you out.
awful. Correct. And I can only see it getting worse. So it's kind of like a toothache. I know I have a cavity, but I can still chew. That's where I'm at with that thing, but it's going to end up being a root canal or a tooth removal, an abscess, whatever. I got to take care of it. So I'm really curious about this. Is that you can feel free, by the way, to ask me any questions you want. That's my personal male pelvic floor issue that I'm fascinated about what we do in the course for something like that.
I think the thing that really comes up for me here is like most people wouldn't associate you with a typical avatar of somebody who would have pelvic floor dysfunction, right? Like you're fit, healthy, like we're a good weight, like we exercise regularly, and yet still like we're having dysfunction and it's not something that's regularly talked about. I want to tell you how much I appreciate you going out and sharing it. And I know that people are going to listen to this and like it is really cool to see like you be that vulnerable and share that. Like I appreciate it. I think it's probably the biggest thing because I think people who are less confident wouldn't share it. They would feel like a lot of reservation to do it. And
I had a little bit of anxiety right before I shared it.
I think that, and that's a very normal thing. And I think something that again just doesn't get talked about. Like it's just like, oh, like especially like you're a macho guy, like you don't like whatever, like you don't talk about like again, like that your insides feel like they're going to fall out and that your penis is shrinking and that you're feeling like these terrible pains and that you should just suck it up, right? Like, because that's the macho thing. So I think that's that's, I think, where the narrative and where the journey starts. It's just making it normal for us to talk about, and that,
Yeah,
like, again, that
let's be clear for a moment there. My penis shrinks for the moment. It's not shrinking. I'm
not
not,
permanent.
it's not
Not
like I'm getting,
permanent.
I'm not getting shorter and my dick is getting smaller as I age. That's not what I'm talking about. This is a 30-minute lapse
Yeah,
in time.
30-minute lapse, which
All
makes
right.
sense, right? Because, like, if I think about it from an anatomy standpoint, right? I think of, like, the bowels and stuff pushing down on the pelvic floor. So for those of you who are listening who don't understand the pelvic floor, it's like a bowl basically inside of your pelvis that supports all of the internal organs that are sitting inside of your abdominal cavity, right? So what I imagine Sean is describing is we get a big Valsalva, we get a big pressure buildup, and we push down. The pelvic floor can't tolerate the pressure, so we experience pain, dysfunction, discomfort. And so, almost as a gut reaction, if you will, like, we get draw up and contraction of that pelvic floor, and everything's drawing literally up and in, right? Because my pelvic floor is now trying to contract to support the things that are going on inside of my abdominal cavity, right? So again, like a normal reaction to what you're experiencing, where we're getting this big pressure and the system basically reacts to say, like, whoa, 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 like, we got to hold on to this tight. And it takes 25 minutes for your system to, like, calm down, right? Like,
Yes.
all, again, going into, like, the sweating and, like, this, like, the feel that we have, and maybe some of the, like, even, like, the moaning and things that are associated with that is, like, this, we're so upregulated from that experience with all, again, if we go into the nervous system, all of the sympathetic ganglia that live, like, in the thoracic spine, right, that are going to be linked to all the viscera that are going to cause that sympathetic reaction, right? Like, sweaty,
Interesting.
like that's what kind of comes up for me. Just that, like, again, not necessarily something that's in the course, but something that comes up for me when we're talking about this is, like, cool, like, I wonder what the connection is to that, right? Of, like, understanding that the diaphragm is, like, a super highway for a bunch of different nerves, and all of the innervation of the nervous system that lives, like, in the abdominal cavity, like
Why
that,
wouldn't that be in the course?
because I didn't think about it until just barely. Like, no one's ever verbalized, like, sweating. And I'm like, that's an interesting connection of something maybe I need to dive deeper into to go back and add in.
So do we need to add it?
I'm gonna look and see. I'm gonna start
Yeah.
to correlate, like, pelvic floor dysfunction and sympathetic response and see what we find.
The reason I'm asking is I'm thinking, like, I would want someone who took this course to be able to help me. I feel like this course would be a failure if I came to Active Life as me and said, hey, I'm dealing with this. Who's taking the pelvic health specialty? And we got a bunch of ALPs who raised their hand. I'm like, great. Who wants a new client? I'm your guy. And I told them what was going on. Like, I don't know how to help you.
Yeah, you're like, I
That
don't freaking know what to do with that.
right. That would be a sign to me that we need to improve the course.
Yeah, it would. And I think the big thing that comes up for me is, like, just getting more experience and more exposure to, which is where I think, like, we do a really great job, is that, like, we're going to put out a product that is really solid, and we're also not opposed to making revisions, to adding in more stuff as we learn more stuff, to making it better and better and better and better over time. As we continue to learn and get more feedback from people who are going through it, like, it gets more and more refined. Like, we add in more and more content as people are going through it, so that, because, like, we're getting more data points and say, cool, like, that's really valuable. Let's add that in because I think somebody else could benefit from that. We start to just piece that in for sure.
Okay.
So, what are you going to do about your pelvic floor? I don't take clients anymore, Sean.
You know, I know. It's so, you know, it's a fascinating question because I'm putting myself now, I'm realizing I'm our client, right? I would rather go to Muay Thai than train my pelvic floor. And the initial thing that comes to mind is I only have so much time to work out. I don't want to create more. Could I create more? Yeah. I don't want to. So let's say I have 90 minutes a day. How do I want to spend it? I'm not in the best shape of my life. I'm actively working towards getting into better shape. You helped me through some stuff a while back, and you did such a good job. I don't remember what it was.
Your
Like,
neck.
that's neck, right?
Yeah, was
So,
the
and
iron.
knees and knee.
Yeah.
So that hasn't been a problem since we worked together like a year ago. And I dealt with, like, I had some biceps tendon issues, like distal biceps tendon, and I knew how to work through that myself. So I'm still doing that. It's getting way better. Like, I'm doing that, frankly, in preparation for holding a baby. Like, that was the impetus to actually work on it. I know a baby is coming. Like, I
Yeah.
don't want to deal
Feel
with
like I'm
this
gonna
when I
have to
have a
be in
baby.
football carry mode for the next
Yeah.
9 months.
Right. So I just want to get in shape right now. And the thought of adding pelvic floor in for me is not exciting. What are your thoughts?
I don't know that the barrier is as big as you're making it, is probably the thing.
Go
The
on.
so it's for me, how can we layer in pelvic floor to Muay Thai? How do we layer it into our strength training? How do we layer it in? Like, you'll have to start with some foundational things, but I think that's also a misconception, is that like pelvic floor training is only like over here laying on your back doing breathing. And while that's a really great place for us to live, it's not the end all. Like, that doesn't correlate over to you throwing a spinning back kick and being able to do like all sorts of barbell exercises, right? It's a
And
good place to
that
start.
is where my mind goes. My mind goes to, I'm going to be spending 30 minutes clenching my asshole.
Right. And that's
That's
not necessarily the case, right?
okay.
It's to me very similar to like a lot of other things of like you find where you're currently at, what your limitations are, and yours is fairly high, right? It's, hey, this only comes on when I have a high bout of effort, like again, like pressing, squatting, something that way, a heavy bowel movement, and it takes a long time to recover. And so it's a matter of, okay, we can strip it down to the basics for maybe a little while, but it's not going to likely be like a 6 month journey of like you laying on your back and yeah, doing Kegels and clenching your glute cheek, your butt cheeks
What
together and
does it
doing
look
things.
like? What does it look like? Because that's what I picture. And that is a big reason why I haven't done anything about it.
I think it starts with pressure management, but I think you would likely start yours in patterns that you're experiencing symptoms with, right? Like, a big thing for me with pelvic floor is this idea of like this big cylinder of air that we're basically moving and managing in our abdominal cavity, right? The pelvic floor just makes it the bottom of the can. So as I Valsalva, I push down hard on the top of the can and pushes down on the bottom because the pelvic floor can't take
Explain what
that.
Valsalva is so people understand.
So it's a big breath in typically, and then a bearing downward, right? So it's this closing of a glottis that we basically bear down and cause this big buildup of pressure inside my abdominal cavity. People typically associate it with like, again, like a heavy back squat, or like I'm gonna go do a big bout of effort, into that big breath in, and then they push down really hard, or again, like on the toilet, like that big, like push down on your abdominal
And
contents to try to move
just so
things.
people are understanding even deeper, can you Valsalva while exhaling, or do you have to be holding your breath to Valsalva?
To my understanding, it's a bear down against a closed glottis, so air shouldn't be moving, right? So that's the thing, is that like I have this big bolus of air, and it can't escape. The pressure can't escape anywhere,
Right.
right? So
So
it just pushes down.
I want to share my nuanced understanding of that, and I'll take your thought on it. If air would need to escape at a rate faster than air is able to escape, it would create potentially the same problem as air not being able to escape at all. So if, for example, I'm creating down pressure and I'm breathing out, because like that's breathing out, right? It's not me holding my breath. But the air, I'm not letting the air out as fast as the air wants to move out as a result of the pressure. That's still a Valsalva, even if it's to a lesser degree on a continuum. And I'm open to being wrong. I let my license lapse in 2017, and I never studied this stuff extensively. So please, if that's not a Valsalva, tell me, and we can just call that an increase in pelvic floor pressure.
So I think the idea of like bearing down and the idea of pressure leaking makes sense, but I don't know that I would call that a classic Valsalva maneuver.
Okay.
Again, I'm open to being wrong there too, but like to my understanding, it's that bear down against a closed glottis, which means air should not be escaping. That doesn't mean that, again, I'm not managing that pressure well enough to where the pressure needs to leak out at a fast enough rate before I get symptomatic. Right. So maybe I need to let out pressure more consistently at a higher volume. And I would say just because you're making noise as well, right? Like, yeah, you're just not getting enough air outward, right,
Okay.
to cause that.
Okay. So is it covered in the course how I would get into those positions and learn to better control the air regulation that is forcing downward and creating pelvic floor dysfunction?
Yeah, we talk a lot about like the relationship between the breath, between diaphragm, between the pelvic floor and the piston that is that big cylinder of air, and then being able to take it and tailor it to various positions, right? Because we take it into squatting, we take it into deadlifting, into pressing, into it's this idea of if I can teach a principle of intra-abdominal pressure management, I can then apply that principle to whatever method I'm choosing to, right? Just based off of how my body's changing position and where pressure is going to build up the most.
Okay. That's cool. This course is way cooler than I thought it was. I actually had some imposter syndrome about this course, if I'm being honest with you, because I know that there are people out there who have tremendous pre and postpartum courses. And I wasn't sure if ours would measure up to theirs. And what you're describing to me is that this is not a pre and postpartum course. There's a pre and postpartum section within the course so that people have a basic understanding of it. But this is a pelvic health course that applies to men, applies to women, applies to pregnancy, applies to non-pregnancy. And it doesn't necessarily make you a specialist in a pregnancy client. It makes you somebody who fits between the pregnancy specialist and the generalist. So if a person is training in your gym setting or training with you one-on-one, and they're not looking to work with a pelvic floor, excuse me, a pregnancy specialist, you at least have the tool set to keep them safe.
100%.
Okay. That's cool. I'm way more excited about this course now. Especially because I think it'd be really cool to see guys stepping forward and saying, this is a problem that I know if I have it, there's other guys who have it.
Oh yeah.
I'm not the only guy who's dealing with this.
Yeah. And that was like one of the avatars, again, like going back to your original question of like the pelvic, like men's assignment is like that was part of the thing that I wanted to portray is that it's this taboo thing for men to talk about, that they have pelvic floor dysfunction, that they have urinary retention, that they have stress urinary incontinence, that they have pelvic floor pain, right? That they have chronic pelvic pain, that it's like you like it's not macho, and that you don't really have a space for where you can have that discussion and feel supported,
Why
right?
isn't it macho? That's so interesting. Like, what? Why is it that like, if my shoulder hurts, I'm like, dude, you got this fucking shoulder thing. But when I feel like my, obviously, it's not macho when my dick is shrinking to, I don't know. I don't know what percent of the size. I'd have to do some math and pull out a ruler at various times of the day.
It's a big equation based on what we were just described, so
It's
it's
not that big of an equation,
fine.
but. I understand that, but if I just have pelvic floor pain or dysfunction and that part of it's not happening, why is it any less manly to discuss?
I think because it's not associated most of the time with something that, again, like I usually think of like, oh, my shoulder hurts, or like I got this shoulder thing. It's usually alongside some sort of athletic activity or some sort of like thing that we're doing together. And if I'm like, oh, I can't because my balls hurt, like people are gonna be like, dude, shut up.
That,
Right?
okay,
Like,
fair. Like my fear was, do I have testicular cancer? Is this
right.
testicular cancer spreading to other places in my, like I'm feeling pain elsewhere? Because it always
Right.
feels like a solid, swift kick to the balls.
Right.
Plus.
Plus some.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Huh.
And so I think some of it is that, right? Like it's this idea too, like, that you wouldn't talk about that with your friends. And if you did, they would bust your balls about it literally and be like, okay. And so you don't feel comfortable bringing that up because the sphere
Yeah.
is like, that doesn't happen to men, right? Like that doesn't happen to us. And I
Right,
think
they don't
that's
understand it. They
they
have
don't
no
understand.
context for it.
It's, yeah, because it's a normal conception for women, right? Because like, all right, again, like their anatomy is different, and it's built to carry and bear children and have babies. So like, yeah, it's normal for us to talk about pelvic floor dysfunction for women because
Well,
they're the ones.
I imagine pelvic floor dysfunction for women is more frequent, especially after having babies, than it is for men. And so if 70%, I'm making a number up, I don't know if you know the percentage of postpartum women, whether it's 1 month or 10 years postpartum, experience pelvic floor dysfunction. Well, then it's commonplace to talk about it. You might be the rare one who feels guilty about not having had it.
Right.
Where on the guy side, I bet it's lower than 10%.
Yeah, it's much less. And it's again, it's that idea of like you're like as a man, like the pelvic floor dysfunction that you get, it's different, and there's again less exposure, if you will, right?
How does it
Like, again,
develop? Do you know, like, how did I end up with my insides feeling like they're coming out of the hole in my dick and my asshole at the same time?
could be a number of different things. For me, it's like going back to likely a lot of, again, pressure management, bracing strategy, neurological coordination of prior experience. And again, as we age, right, like things change. And so, and we haven't been training as much. So now it's like, cool, well, I can press this much weight, like I'm still strong. And then my pelvic floor, like my bracing strategy hasn't changed. I haven't been able to work that as often. And so I think, I mean, the pelvic floor is muscles just like anything else, and it needs training. Right.
Why does a course like this, well, does a course like this need to live after someone completes ALP? Or is a course like this something that you think, as is, somebody could take if our policy wasn't you have to go through ALP first?
I don't think they would be as, I don't think they would be successful.
Why?
Do I think they can digest the knowledge? Probably. But do I think, based on the experience and working with individuals who have gone through ALP, the ability to communicate really effectively really, really sings to me on this. And we hammer that so effectively through ALP because there's going to be so many topics that are going to come up across this that need to be navigated incredibly cautiously, if
Like
that makes
what?
sense.
Like what?
Like, how do you bring up somebody who pees their pants every time they do double, every time they jump, every time they sneeze? How do I bring up that someone's having pain when they have sex with their husband? How do I
Right.
bring up somebody's having pain when they have sex with their wife?
Right.
How do I bring up that, like, it's those levels that I think going through ALP and gaining a lot of the communication skills and the assessment tools and all the pieces that would lead you to be really successful in navigating those pieces. But I think if you took on the outside course, again, like you could, you, I think you would retain the information, but I don't know that it would be as valuable. It wouldn't be as valuable to you.
It feels to me like going through physical therapy or chiropractic or medical school for the duration that they are, and then acquiring a specialty afterwards for a certain type of client that's a fraction of the time, that would lack contextual understanding necessary to be completely successful prior, which is how we built it. But I was just curious if that's an error, if we could have gone the other way and just said, hey, you want to be a pelvic floor specialist? Come take this course. You're saying no.
I don't think so. And again, some of the stuff that we build off of has to do with some of the skills that we teach inside of ALP initially, right? So things like the movement assessment, making modifications for training variables and things, and being able to manipulate those things, are ALP is going to have much more success than somebody who got, again, like a certification from another company or another business and then is trying to come and do this.
So what would you tell the person who's like, I want to work with pelvic floor problems, and I've been a trainer for 10 years. Like, I'm a pretty successful trainer. I want to start working with pelvic floor problems. Why do I need to go through 13 months of intense ALP before you teach me this stuff when this other company will just sell me their pelvic floor course right now?
So why do they need to go through ALP in order for this to be successful? Is that basically the basis of the question?
It's the
Just
basis
want to
of
make
the
sure.
question, given the lens of someone who's been in the world for the, 10 years working successfully. Because I, one of the things I've been telling people a lot on podcasts that I've been going on is ALP is for the coach who knows they're already top 10% and is completely dissatisfied with that. They want to be top 1%. And so they go to ALP for that. It's not for the new coach who's never done anything before. It's not for the person who's just graduated high school or even the person who just graduated college, frankly. It could be, but they're gonna have a much steeper learning curve and they need to be a very different kind of person to be successful. ALP is best for somebody who's been in the field for 5 years, 10 years, whether it's been coaching group class or coaching one-on-ones, those two are fairly irrelevant. But they've seen some things. And they now know what they don't know. And so they want to come and get more, and then they learn more things that they don't know. Like, I just made a post recently that, CrossFit gyms shouldn't be aiming to attract 93-year-old women as their primary avatar, and it might not even be a good idea to take them when they come. And I got blasted for it.
Mm-hmm.
I got called a misogynist. I got called a monster. I got called an elitist. I got called all kinds of things. I was like, yo, what you guys are all missing is I wouldn't take that client personally either. I don't know what to do with that person. And I have a doctorate. And I trained clients for a decade. And I worked with Olympic medalists. And I worked with CrossFit Games champions. And I worked with professional baseball players. And if that person came in, I wouldn't take them because I don't know what to do with them. This is not about I know something you don't know. It's about something that we all share. It's selfish to take that client. They don't need what you have. I got smashed for that, which was sad. I wasn't sad for myself. I was sad for the state of the union.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's like, this is a fucking disaster. You all think this is about you. So the reason I'm asking this is because I imagine somebody who's been in the field for 5 years, 10 years, they know what they don't know. They're a good coach. They're already good. They're getting results for their clients. They're making $75,000, $100,000 a year. They just want to learn the pelvic health stuff. Why do they have to go through ALP first?
There's so many layers to going through ALP that you gain that are not tactical skills, I would say, is the biggest thing. Again, like, you don't know what you don't know, and the systems that you have are probably good and can be better. And taking all of the information out of context without exposure to the prior content would make it really difficult for them to then go out and actually utilize.
Mm-hmm. I want to add to that answer. It came to me as I was actually on my soapbox a moment ago. The reason why the top 10% coaches who become the top 1% become the top 1% is because they agonize over the last 10%. So what happens is you might take a 13-month course from us, ALP and the mentorship, and say, you know what? Only about 10% of it was relevant to me. The other 90% I knew I had, I was down. Great. That extra 10% makes you 200% more effective.
Right.
And the top 1% coach wants to be exposed to as much as they possibly can to make sure that they are shoring up their weaknesses. Yeah.
And I would echo too, right? Like, if what they're looking for is, then they're not a good fit for what we're offering. And so we would likely refer them to somebody else if that's what they want. It was a short course, weekend course on pelvic health. Like, I just want exposure to the content. Okay, great. That's not what we're doing.
Right. And that does give you the opportunity to speak in more common language with the client. It doesn't necessarily give you the skill set necessary to service the client completely.
Yeah.
Lance, this has been great, man. You did a great job. Lance. I really enjoy, like, I'm sorry, Jesus Christ. It used to be Lance who was doing these calls. Now it's Kalen. Kalen, who lives down the block from Lance.
Yes. I was going to say, we live fairly close together.
Yeah. I really appreciate you coming on. This podcast did not go the direction that I anticipated it going, and I had much more fun doing it this way than I would have doing it the other way.
Good. I'm glad. I also enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun.
Good. Anything that I should have asked that I didn't? Anything people need to know that's pertinent?
No. I would say if this is something that you're interested in and you want to talk more about what's on it, you can always hit me up. I'm always open for answering questions.
I have one more question. Mm-hmm. Is there any putting your fingers in people's butts or vaginas in this course?
No.
Okay.
No, but there is linking with a provider who is licensed to do so.
I love that because what I want people to understand is there is an end to the scope of the coach, at which point it becomes the scope of the medical practitioner.
Yes.
And that scope certainly ends at the beginning of an orifice.
Yes.
And probably prior to that.
Well prior to that. For sure.
All right, Kalen Ashby. Thank you for coming on the show today, man.
All right. Thanks, Sean. Appreciate you.
You're welcome. Term pro. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Active Life Podcast. Please remember, give us a hand, rate it, review it wherever you listen to shows. We are on a mission to humanize the healthcare industry by professionalizing the fitness industry to empower the individual to live a life unlimited by the way that their body looks, feels, or performs. If you are inspired by that mission and want to jump on the wagon, find us anywhere. Active Life Professional on Instagram, Active Life RX on Instagram. Come to me personally at Dr. Sean Pestuch. We want to welcome you onto the train. We want you to be a part of the mission. We want to offer you the opportunity to pursue this right alongside us. We're inspired by your effort, and we hope to help you in your journey. Turn pro.